Albinism is a genetic condition that basically it's a recessive gene in both the mother and the father that then becomes dominant in the child. And basically it means your body can't produce melanin, which is the, you see it in the skin colour, you know, tan. Mm. You know, darker people have more melanin. People with albinism have none or very minimal amounts.
And is it something that changes over your course of your life, or...?
No, it's something that is basically set in the wiring of your DNA. It's just basically how you're wired. You're born like that and you stay the same. So you notice it in people because they've got really pale skin, often sort of ivory blonde hair. So it's not a sort of cornmeal blonde. It's a very light, and also very poor eyesight because you've got pigment at the back of your eyes that gives you the focal point for your eyes.
Right.
So and as a result of that not being there, there's some whole lot of your eye nervous system doesn't develop, and people have, you know, a lot of people have vision, you know, close to legally blind.
Okay. And is it something that you're guaranteed to pass on to your children?
No. Like I said, it's a recessive gene. So it's a dominant in me, but when, you know, for example, when you have a child, you know, I'll hand off half one chromosome to my child, my wife will hand off one chromosome to them. So then it will be a recessive, it's a recessive in my daughter, for example.
Mm.
If two people with albinism both had a child, that increases the likelihood of it quite a bit. You know, it's not, I don't think it's 100%, but it's, you know, pretty good odds.
Yeah, yeah. How many people then, when you growing up at school, did you encounter with albinism?
Well, there was only one, which was my little sister. When I was born, I was the eldest in our family, and I was born, and, you know, my mum discovered it and thought, oh, this is pretty terrible, and, you know, kids won't be able to see anything, and it's going to be white, and, you know, going to sunburn all the time. So she said to a doctor after my brother was born, he was born normal, and then she said, doctor, can I have my tubes tied? The doctor said, don't worry about a thing. 1 in 4, that's the statistics. 1 in 4 is the same as 4 in 16. In my mum's case, she got 2 out of 3. So my little sister had albinism as well. So we were together, and I grew up in country town or country area in New Zealand. And about half the kids at the school were Māori, so we stuck out like sore thumbs.
But what was that like, though? I mean, let's face it, teenagers, you heard me make a bit of a crass remark at the start, teenagers can be brutal. Did you encounter a certain level of stick?
Oh yeah, you get hassled when you're a teenager about anything. But if you're a little bit different, you get hassled just because you're different. So I don't know. I think you deal with that as part of dealing with life. It's, you know, part of what builds up your resilience.
Yeah.
You know, it's never pleasant. I've had more nicknames than you could throw a stick at, really. But yeah, Snow, Honky was my favourite.
You had a favourite?
The one guy even called me Blue, and I'm not sure why that was. But,
You're listening to John Harris. He's the Communications Officer for the Albinism Fellowship of Australia. And I wonder, what about in older life, though? Because I don't want to go near the word racism, because it's obviously it's not racism, but a certain level of prejudice as an adult. Do you encounter that?
No, I don't. I mean, a lot of times, because I had white hair all through my life, I was always assumed to be a lot older than I was. You know, so some people thought I was, you know, when my daughter was born, I was in my late 30s, I think.
Mm.
And people automatically assumed that was my granddaughter.
Wow.
There's no harm in that particularly. It's just assumptions. Once you're an adult, people are, you know, you encounter stupid people everywhere, but not very many of them.
Mm.
So mostly people just, when I'm dealing with people, I've got, you know, one eye is legally blind, the other one's slightly better than that. Most of my friends actually forget that I've got shocking eyesight.
Mm.
So, you know, they say, here, you drive. And I say, maybe not. not such a wise move.
John Harris, do you think it is misunderstood, though? Because as you're explaining, albinism is, it's nothing. I mean, there's no difference between you and I. I mean, I'm sitting here wearing glasses myself.
That's right. Well, it's one of those things. It's, you know, it's a limitation. But, you know, if you look at your arm, as far as your arm can reach, that's a limitation. So it's just, for me, it's just normal. If you went from having your eyesight to my eyesight overnight, you know, your world would get a bit tipped upside down. So, but it's what you accept as normal. And one of the things that the albinism conference is about is making this condition that looks really odd when you have a whole bunch of people. And when one person walks into a room, you might think, oh, they look a bit different. Making it normal. One of the things that I'm really proud of is that when you, these conferences tend to attract a lot of young parents who have children with albinism, and they're worried about what their life will be like for their kids, how their kids will, what they can expect to do when they grow up. They walk in and meet people like me. I own a business and have run it for 20 plus years. I've got a mate who's an guy with albinism, and he's an astronomer in the Canada. You know, one of the most successful astronomers in North America. Yeah, you know, look at stargazing for a guy with shocking eyesight. How does that work? I don't know, but he's really good at it. Another friend's a doctor. You can do anything, and it's that message for kids that you can do anything you want as long as you put your mind to it. Except maybe fly fighter jets. That's probably off the agenda.
Oh, don't rule it out. John Harris, my guest. John, what was that like for you then, the first time you went from just you and your sister growing up thinking it was just you two to walking into a room with other people with albinism?
It was surprisingly emotional. I walked in there and I'd always been, felt a minority, you know, like that was me in the world, basically. And I wandered into this room, and all of a sudden there was this, it was a Christmas party that was organised by a couple of activist mums. So it's full of little kids with snowy hair, and they were in the majority in that room. I thought, gee, I found my people.
And what, you said you were emotional, you were teary that day?
I don't know that I teared up. I remember having a lump in my throat, though. Yeah, it was a really wonderful feeling. And it was wonderful that then lots of those parents came up and asked me, what do you do? And I said, oh, look, I work as a journalist. I was working for an afternoon newspaper then. And they were saying, oh, wow, how do you do that? And all of a sudden some kids' lights started going on for some of the kids there about what was possible.
Well, you've got the 6th Albinism Fellowship of Australia biennial conference. It's in Cairns. Now, I mean this with utmost respect. Is Cairns the ideal place you should be holding this?
This is our world. There's nowhere we should be banned from. You just whack on a hat and a good dose of sunscreen and everywhere is home.
So what goes on at these gatherings?
There's all sorts of things. There's a mixture of educational sessions where you have people who are a geneticist talking about the latest studies into genetics and what that means for people with albinism. There's also more practical things, which is about visual aids, things, how you can use technology, the sort of latest types of glasses. There's a particular thing about coloured contact lenses as well this weekend. And then there are a bunch of activities for the kids as well. But also there's a whole lot of social stuff in between those information sessions, talking about, which is where people swap stories and experiences. You know, that's one of the greatest learnings you can get about how do you deal with this situation. Oh, I've got a really terrible teacher at school. How did you deal with it? And, you know, someone else will say, well, I had that too, and what I did was this, and it worked really well. So swapping stories.
Sure. And so, John, as you alluded to before, you'd be encouraging perhaps parents of children with albinism to come along and say g'day.
That's right. Come along. I'd love to see them. And, you know, not everyone can get there. So if you can't come along, then reach out. If you type Google Albinism Fellowship, you'll find the website. And it's actually, don't deal with it alone, because, you know, loneliness is the hardest thing. If you feel like you're the only person in the world that's ever gone through an experience, it's always hard. A burden shared is a burden halved.
Yep.
It's a bit like that. Reach out, and there's a lot of friends waiting to meet you.